Hi and welcome everyone. I'm Stacey Barr, the performance measure specialist of StaceyBarr.com and creator and host of the Performance Measure Blueprint Workshop. Today is, if you're in Australia, Thursday, the 2nd of July. And the topic of today's call is managing up, how to engage managers and executives to measure what matters. Now, we have lots of new people in our Measure Up community. Measure Up is my twice-monthly email newsletter, which many of you will be aware of. I've actually had a few hundred people join in just the past couple of months, which is really exciting. So I do know then that many of you who are listening may not know very much about me yet. So before we do get stuck into our topic today, I'll give you the short version of my story, and that will help you understand a little bit more about where I'm coming from and why I'm professing to be able to share some wisdom about how to engage managers and executives in performance measurement. So essentially, I'm a teacher and mentor for performance measurement practitioners, which includes corporate planners, business analysts, improvement officers and performance measure facilitators, anyone really who has some kind of role in their organisation or business or company in measuring the performance of their business, company or organisation. And it's been since 1999 that I've been a freelance specialist in business performance measurement. And really what that means is that's all I'm doing. I'm focusing on helping people to do a lot better what I've seen done very, very poorly on the whole in measuring performance. That includes making vague and jargonistic strategy more measurable, designing meaningful measures that align with strategy, and really that help people to buy in to measuring performance and improving performance also. Before 1999, I was a research statistician for several years. Yes, I sat at a computer and analysed survey data and did all sorts of crazy reports. But after getting a little bit bored with that, I then took a role as the measurement consultant within a railway organisation here in Queensland, Queensland Rail, for 6 years. And that's really where much of my initial learning about performance measurement happened, was through working with people from the train drivers all the way through to the CEO on measuring. And there wasn't much practical advice at that time, or networks or coaches or consultants that were particularly doing a good job in the measurement space. And really, that's when I began creating PUMP. Now, PUMP is the name of the methodology that I created to make measuring what matters easier, quicker, more systematic than typical approaches, which, however flash they look, do tend to produce poor measures that people don't believe in or don't ever implement or really use to do what performance measures are for, which is improving performance. So you'll get a good taste of my opinions, ideas and experiences in measuring what matters in Measure Up, the twice-monthly email newsletter that I know most of you are getting. It currently goes out to over 7,000 subscribers worldwide. If you haven't subscribed yet, you can sign up for free. It's very easy and quick at StaceyBarr.com, that's StaceyBarr.com/facilitators. And if you're wondering why that facilitators bit is there, it's because my website's divided into a few little parts depending on who you are and what kind of role you have in relationship to performance measurement. So there's a small business portal on my website, and the facilitators portal is particularly for those people who work in larger organisations and larger companies, and your role is something to do with helping your organisation measure what matters. So really my favourite and most precious goal is, well, in business anyway, is to help people build their performance measurement capability, because that is certainly one of the most critical and foundational systems any organisation has if the organisation wants to succeed. And I hope you really quickly get a sense of how passionate I am about this and how much emphasis I put on making it practical for you. And today's call will be a great opportunity to do exactly that. Now, given that you signed up for this call, I know that you don't particularly have a problem believing in the transformational power of measuring what matters, but I also know, and this is from personal contact with many of you and also some recent surveys I've are done with my Measure Up subscribers, I know that you're struggling to get the level of support that you need from your managers and executives to implement performance measurement in your organization, either on a small scale or it might be an organization-wide scale for you. This is actually the greatest obstacle in the way of a company or organization embracing performance measurement, making it happen and really engendering that performance culture. And ironically, it's the most essential prerequisite for the success of performance measurement too, and that is the engagement of executives and managers, the decision makers, the ones who are going to resource the performance measurement effort. It's also been an obstacle, I know, for many of you who have wanted to come to one of our performance measure blueprint workshops, but you didn't know how to express the value of it in terms that your manager is going to understand and then obviously approve your coming along. Your manager may not be in the space that you're in appreciating and valuing the power that measurement can have in your organization. Now, irrespective, unless you can appreciate something, and that something is that you are the leader of performance measurement in your organization, and that's simply because you're the one with the passion and the desire to make it happen, unless you can appreciate that you are that leader, you're not going to make much progress. It's really about you stepping up into that space of saying, I'm going to make something happen here. Whatever it takes, I'm going to help my organization see the light and appreciate the value of measuring and managing organizational performance. And doing that rather than sitting there and waiting for a miracle to happen and for your manager suddenly to get, for the penny to drop for them and they say, oh, wow, I can now suddenly see what you've been saying all along. Yes, let's go down this road of measuring and managing performance. So today, let's turn the spotlight onto the practical strategies that you can take to manage upwards and give your managers and executives every chance to understand and appreciate the value of measuring what matters and thus give their full support to implementation. Now, what I want to stress here is this is not about manipulation. It's not about coercion. It's not about that at all. The whole point of the call today is about giving you practical strategies to understand where your managers and executives are coming from, the reasons behind why they don't value performance measurement, and helping them see that, see the assumptions that they're making and test those assumptions, and for themselves to decide whether they really can see that performance measurement is going to help them. Now, that's not an easy thing to do, I know. So the tips and strategies that I'll give you today are really about giving you a starting point, something to play with, something to experiment with. So what we're going to cover is really all the things that I promised in my invitation for you to join me today. Firstly, we're going to look at five reasons why managers and executives don't value performance measurement enough to give it time and resources, and we know how critical that is. The second thing that we'll cover today is the six reasons why managers and executives do give time and resources to performance measurement. And I'll be sharing a few little case studies with you there about managers and executives that I've personally worked with, and I can relay to you the reasons why they've really valued measuring performance. The third topic that we'll cover today is the simple three-part formula that I learned from performance management expert Gary Kokens, who is author of a great book called Performance Management. I'll talk a little bit more about that later. But his formula is about how to overcome resistance to performance measurement. I'll share that with you. The fourth topic for today is about three strategies for how you can make the case for performance measurement in your organization instead of waiting for that miracle to occur. Now, when I was putting this call together, I realized just how much we could delve into these topics. When I was planning out how I was going to talk about each of those four topic areas, I realized 1 hour is nowhere near enough. So please forgive me. We're going to go broad rather than deep. You will still pick up some great ideas and definitely some practical tips that you can apply straight away. No doubt about that. But I'm sure that maybe sometime in the future, we could do almost a whole training program just on how to engage people in performance measurement. Let's do the best we can today, and we'll get stuck straight into our first topic, which is the five reasons why managers and executives don't value performance measurements enough to give time and resources to it. Now, if you want to help your managers and executives to value performance measurement, because you and I both know how critically important it is to success, really, in any organizational business, and we don't have to prove that anymore. There's too much evidence around in the world that shows how powerful a role measurement has in that. But if you want to help your managers and executives value it, then you've got to start by understanding their personal aversions to measurement. Now, obviously, that's logical, since you don't want to create a strategy to influence them that completely misses the mark. You don't want to just pick up some great idea that sounds, oh, this is good, this should help them buy in. But unless you've understood the reasons why they're not buying in, the strategy you pick up, as good as it sounds, may be completely irrelevant for them, and it's not addressing their true aversions to supporting measurement. So let's go through the most common reasons why managers and executives, as opposed to any other person in your organization, bear that in mind. How you engage managers and executives in performance measurement is quite different to how you would engage your colleagues, employees, staff in general. So why they don't value performance measurement and don't support it through the formal allocation of resources, I've got, well, five reasons basically. But as I go through them, you might like to think about which of them sound like your manager or executive, which of them resonate, and begin thinking of ways that you can find out for sure, okay, to find out what really is their aversion to it. And if you've already done this or already got some inkling about this, I'd love for you to type in the webcast Q&A box what an additional reason might be that managers and executives don't buy into performance measurement. And if you do that, and if we get a few of them coming through, I'll share them as well after I've gone through these first five. The first one, the first reason why managers and executives don't buy in or support performance measurement is the perceived cost and effort. It just seems way too high. When they think of going down the path of measuring performance, they think of things like hiring a team of consultants or getting in the big performance management gurus to help them decide how they're going to measure their strategy or set up a balanced scorecard or create this very complex cascaded system of measures from top to bottom and left to right and inside out in the organization. Sounds big and scary, sounds very costly. They also think of, when they think of a performance measurement system, they think, wow, we've got to invest in IT solutions like dashboards or scorecard applications. That's going to be costly. That's time-consuming. We all know that, on the whole, IT applications cost more and take longer than we ever planned for them to be. It's not a cheap thing to do. So they think of that as an overwhelming cost. Another thing they are worried about in the sense of how much it's going to cost and how much effort it's going to take to go down the performance measurement path is how much time it's going to consume of people in their everyday work, in the amount of data collection that might be needed for new measures, in the amount of reporting that might be needed. They have these visions of performance measurement becoming an industry in the organization. But the truth is that you don't need any of these things to make performance measurement work. So this reason of the cost and effort being too high isn't too hard to debunk. You can quickly build internal performance measurement skill, for example, really quickly. And you can streamline your existing reporting processes, which are Excel-based. You do not need to have dashboard or scorecard software. In fact, and this will be the topic of a case study call that we're doing in July for our Measures and More Mastermind program, is that really you've got to do a fair amount of groundwork with performance measurement before you even are dashboard ready, so to speak. So investing in the dashboard solution is definitely not the first thing you should do. And the world's leading provider of dashboard and scorecard software, SAS, they agree with me on that. They definitely find that they have the most successful dashboard implementations when the measurement system, the measurement approach, is well thought through first. And there's certainly a lot of scope in taking on a performance measurement initiative a lot of scope to reduce data collection rather than increase it. And that's by taking a lot of waste out of the existing data collection processes that you have. So there are ways to debunk that first reason that managers and executives fear that performance measurement is going to cost more and take more effort than they can even get their heads around. The second reason is a fear of transparency. They're worried that the measures will show they're doing a bad job or not as good a job as everyone might think. Now, this is a symptom that they're seeing performance measurement as a tool to help other people judge them, rather than seeing performance measurement as a tool to inform them so that they can make better decisions. So it's really a reframing of their view of performance measurement that's needed in this case to get over that fear of transparency. How measures are reported to your manager for their own use to judge process performance and so that they can make a great impact on process performance and then promote the successes. That's the frame that you want to have performance measurement in, instead of how the measures are reported to your managers and executives' peers and superiors, which might be the chief executive officer, it might be their fellow senior executives, it might be the board of directors, so that those people can judge the performance of your manager executive. That's not where performance measurement serves the organisation. So really, that's one way of overcoming the fear of transparency, is to practice that reframing of what performance measurement's really for and who it's really for, clarifying that role that it has. The third reason that executives and managers tend not to want to support performance measurement is that they're feeling quite cynical from past failures, past attempts to measure performance. They think about all the things that have gone wrong with measuring performance in the past, like truckloads of measures that nobody uses, the cost of the reporting. Maybe they've already done a dashboard implementation that failed. I know one of my clients many years ago, when I started working with them, they'd just thrown away a $2 million investment in a scorecard application that the managers refused to use because it didn't have meaningful measures in it. So, yeah, there's plenty of reasons to be cynical, I suppose, from past experience, but that's only because it wasn't done well. And one strategy that I find works quite well if cynicism is the problem is to have a dialogue. You know, why has performance measurement failed? Why don't we want to get into it again? What are the reasons why it's not worth the effort? Have that discussion, put that on the table. And then when all of those concerns are listed, then you can talk about them and say, well, okay, how would we overcome each of these? If we were to do performance measurement properly, what could we do to prevent us from, for example, creating too many measures, or from spending too much money on a dashboard application, or overloading people with data collection? What are the ways that we could overcome that? And there are ways to overcome that. The fourth reason that managers and executives tend not to want to buy in or engage in performance measurement is that they are more action-oriented people rather than reflective people. And we know that performance measurement's about reflection. It's about that, don't just do something, stand there. You know, stand there for a minute and look at how things are and figure out where the problems truly are and what the causes really are, and then act. But the action-oriented people, the action junkies, they don't want to do that. They think when you're saying we should be measuring performance, they imagine long, boring workshops about measures. Oh my goodness, how dry and dull is that? They want to jump in and fix the problem. They don't want to sit around and define the problem and define it to the nth degree. If your manager's like this, take this one gently, because it often means you need to help them see the consequences of fixing ill-defined problems or examples of how their fixes in the past haven't necessarily worked, and doing that in a way that doesn't attack their ego. So this is a slightly trickier one, the action-oriented rather than reflective manager, but it's not impossible. And now you can see why we could be just spending a whole day talking about this topic if we were to delve down into each of these reasons in more depth. Hopefully that's enough of some tips for you so far, though. The fifth reason, before I go into the fifth reason, I'll give you a little reminder. If you have other reasons that your managers or executives are facing that are preventing them from engaging in performance measurement, then feel free to type them into the Q&A box. The fifth reason is they feel that they already know how performance is going and they don't need measures to tell them that. They don't need measures because just by walking around and looking at things, they believe they know what's going on and they know what needs to be done. They've probably actually had a lot of success in the past by going with their gut, or they haven't had any mistakes come back and bite them, or they refuse to see the link between their decisions and the true results that come from those decisions. Just like with the action-oriented manager or executive, you need to take this one gently as well. It's often a form of, it's harsh probably to say this, but I really believe it's true. It's often a form of arrogance that someone can know so much about complex organizational processes and performance dynamics without using objective data or information that performance measures provide. And with arrogance, usually comes a brittle ego, an ego that's very defensive, an ego that's very easy to damage, which you don't want to attack. And really, there's no need to ever do that. There's no need to ever attack somebody's ego to shift their point of view or help them see another perspective. Your job really is to find out how performance measures can serve these managers and executives the way they're currently thinking. I mean, if you want somebody to change, I find it's much easier to visualize a process where you step into their reality, understand their reality, and then together, you know, build that rapport and that trust there, and then they're more likely to walk with you toward a different reality. One angle that you could offer in the case of a manager who feels they already know how performance is and doesn't need measures is to offer measures as a way to help these intuitive managers to convince others of what they already know. So really it's about serving them. I mean, they trust their intuition, but others may not trust their intuition. So measures are a way of helping them turn that intuition into something more concrete that others can resonate with. Okay, so they're my five reasons. I'll quickly go back over them. If any of you have got some ideas, I can see we've got at least one come through there, which is great. So I'll quickly go over the ones that I've suggested here, and if you want to add any to the list, that would be super. The first one is, the first reason that managers or executives don't support measurement is their perception of how costly and how much effort's involved in it. The second is they fear the transparency that measures give. Thirdly, they are cynical from past failures. Fourth, they're action-oriented rather than reflective people. And fifthly, they already know how performance is going and don't need measures for that. Marsha, thank you. You've suggested one here too. Marsha, I think NJ, is that New Jersey? I'm not too familiar with all the states in the US, so forgive me if I got that wrong. But yours is that measurements are used to punish but not to reward people. That is a fantastic reason. If your managers or executives are currently in a system where they are paid or rewarded for their performance or punished for their performance, if that culture of punishment and reward is very pervasive, they're very unlikely to want to get into performance measurement. The more measures they have, the more rods they've got, basically, for their back, which is not a good thing. Any other ideas? Let's see if you've got any more. No, you're still warming up with me today. That's fine. So thanks, Marsha, for suggesting that. That's great. If any more come through, I'll check back in a minute and see. But in the meantime, let's move on to our second topic. Like I said before, there's heaps to cover, so we'll keep the pace cracking. Our second topic for today is the reasons why managers and executives do give time and resources to performance measurement. And again, as I go through these examples, feel free to add your own. Pop them into the Q&A box on the webcast page. Now, what I'm going to do in sharing these reasons with you is really talk about the reasons that I've personally seen and witnessed from chief executives and senior executives that I've worked with over the years. The first one I worked with this wonderful, actually, he came along to one of my performance measure blueprint workshops. It's probably about a year ago, maybe a little longer even. His name's Todd, and he is the CEO of a not-for-profit organization. And what happened at the workshop was, I think it was on, but the first day of the workshop's really about how do you decide what's worth measuring, and the second day is how do you implement measures in a way that makes it easy to interpret and use them. I think he said to me on the second morning that he was still struggling with the idea of how to find meaningful measures. And I asked him this question, Todd, how do you define success for your organization? And there was silence, and he kind of stopped for a minute. It really caused him to reflect. He just he was thinking to himself, we haven't actually done that. We haven't defined what success looks like for our organization. So about a week or two after the workshop, he emailed me and said that was the most profound thing he got out of the workshop, because he went to his board of directors and had that conversation, and it actually helped them get clear about what their purpose was, what their real definition of success was for their not-for-profit organization. And that's where all good measurements got to start, is with clear purpose. So that sense of now being able to more easily communicate and have people understand strategy and understand the organization's purpose, understand what success truly looks like, that was the reason why Todd really embraced the idea of performance measurement, because of the power it gave him to do that. Measurement helps you think through your strategy to a level much deeper and much more specific than a motherhood statement, which is what a lot of our goals and mission statements tend to be. So it really helped make strategy easier to communicate and easier to understand, and that is a valuable thing for many executives and managers. So that's the first reason why managers and executives do want a resource performance measurement, is because of the power it has in making sure that everyone's really tuned in with a clear strategy. The second reason is that, and this works particularly for smaller companies, but it still can be just as relevant in larger organizations. And it's the idea of being able to take the destiny of the company into your own hands. That's what executives want to do. They want to feel in control. They want to feel in control of what they're managing, of what they're leading, of the organization that's under their care. They want to feel like the destiny of that organization truly is in their hands, and not in the hands of fate or luck or economic conditions or market forces. They want to know that what they're doing is the right thing for the organization and it's working. It means that they can sleep soundly at night and not be woken up by worries and concerns and unanswered questions at 3 o'clock in the morning. So this was definitely the case for Rod, who was another CEO who came to the Blueprint workshop. Incidentally, the workshop's not just for CEOs. In fact, they're the minority of people who come, but those who come are the ones who really do want to get their heads around how to lead their organizations better through really concrete strategy and well-measured strategy. And these were Rod's words. He said, I'm here because I want to take the destiny of my company into my own hands. So that's your second reason. The third is about building cohesiveness and clarity among the executive team, checking the understanding that each executive in the team has of the goals and the priorities, and each executive's role, in a sense, in executing those goals and strategies within their own departments. I have worked with senior executive teams where we sat down together and we looked at their strategy with a view to measuring it, because that's why they got me in, is, you know, help us measure this. And when we started talking about their strategy, I realized, and they realized too, which was more important, they didn't have the same understanding of what their goals meant, especially goals that are worded quite vaguely or weaselly. We had to have a whole new conversation about what the goals really meant. Now, we did this with one executive team most recently. Cole was the CEO of that team, and that was what Cole really valued about the 2 days that we had together, was how talking about strategy in a completely different way, a very dialogue-based way, a very natural way, really bringing the language down to everyday language, not management speak, it really helped him see how the executive team left those 2 days with the same understanding of what the strategy was, the same understanding of the priorities, and the same understanding of what they needed to do to achieve that. And that's a valuable thing for any manager or executive, that their team, the team that they're leading, the management team they're leading, has got that shared, cohesive understanding of the direction of the things that they're focusing on. So that's your third reason. The fourth reason is that it's easier to, for managing upwards, it's easier to give the board confidence that the direction is clear. You know, if your senior executive team gets very clear about what the direction is and can articulate it, it's much easier to build confidence in the board of directors, if you like, that they can trust the CEO and his or her executive team to do the right thing for the organisation. Much, much easier for the CEO to go to a board meeting and have a clear sense of priorities and be able to say, this is the progress that we're really making on these priorities, rather than just be, you know, sitting there being grilled by the board of directors on all sorts of things, reacting to every and any question or concern that the board has. So if the CEO is really clear about what matters most and can track progress against those things, he can manage the board. She can manage the board. They can get so much more value out of their board meetings because they're all talking in the same direction. They're not having this scattered kind of experience. So that's the fourth reason. The fifth is that with measurement, it can provide very convincing evidence of the impact of a team to organisational goals. And this was the case for Peter, who was a middle-level manager, really, who headed up a purchasing and procurement department. And he was told, really, by cascading the organisation strategy, that his job was to reduce the operational spend in the procurement department, as well as reducing organisational spend on the goods and services that were being procured. And he did this. He was able to show in numbers the actual size of the impact that his procurement team had by changing their procurement processes, what impact they had on the rest of the organisation in terms of reducing costs, but not at the expense of reducing availability of products and services. That was good for Peter. I mean, and good for Peter's team. Peter is a very very results-oriented person. He cares about making a difference and he wants to make a very objective, tangible difference. So that really was something he valued, was how the measures could really help him do that. That's the fifth reason. And finally, the sixth reason is that this is more personal, I guess, for a lot of managers and executives, that measurement helps demonstrate their management capability through achievement of goals. And this is great for their personal career prospects. I mean, imagine, and this was Peter as well, saving the organisation $40 million in a couple of years. Just imagine how good that looks on his resume. And if he, and I know now he has been promoted since, that's the manager's career path up to becoming a senior executive, is to show massive and impressive and real bottom line improvement in performance. Measures do that. Measures make that happen faster and make that happen easier, but also provides that convincing evidence as well. Okay, let's see. Do you have any suggestions to add to this list? Michael, I can see that you've asked a question here. I'm not quite sure which one that relates to. So if you want to just pop in another message for me just to clarify or add a little bit more about your question, I'll know the best way whether to leave it till later to look at, or whether it relates to one of the reasons why managers and executives don't or do give time and resources to performance measurement. Okay, I haven't seen any other ideas come through yet, so you may still be typing. I'll keep going and check back in a minute. Now, one thing that you want to do is think about which of those six reasons resonate most with your manager executive. It's really worth finding out that, you know, what are the reasons that would compel them to see the value in measurement and do it. And you can't ask that outright, honestly. It just wouldn't quite work well. But you can get a good sense of which of those reasons would really resonate with them just by getting to know them better, getting to know them as people and learning their motivations, learning their values, their personal values, are the choices that they tend to make in different situations. You're not going to have any influence on anyone without first having a good relationship with them, and getting to know them is very, very important. Oh, okay, Michael, thank you. You've said that your comment was to do with why people do not want to get involved with measures. And it was, your comment was, what if they have a weak performer in their team, however, that they believe they have the potential to develop? I think it kind of relates to, it does relate to performance measurement in a way. But if they do have a weak performer in their team that they can develop, then certainly that's something they should be doing. I'm not sure how that relates to why they wouldn't want to provide measures, unless they're concerned about measures revealing that weak performer and having them being dealt with unfairly as a result of the measures. That could certainly be a reason why people don't want to provide measures, so that, you know, people's performance isn't judged on numbers alone, and people are given the opportunity to grow and develop their capability. Michael, and everyone for that matter, I personally don't believe in measuring people. I believe very much in measuring process performance. So I think how we handle people's performance should be quite different to how we handle organisational performance. But thanks very much for raising that. That's great. Marcia, you're going to add to the reasons why managers do support performance measurement, and that is that it provides a narrower focus for efforts, a benchmark to judge whether activities or investments are contributing to performance. That's fantastic. Certainly add that to the list. It definitely does help narrow our focus. It helps us really put our attention on what matters most and not be distracted by other things, and to really set that benchmark, to really know, are the activities and investments, the initiatives, the projects that we're doing, are they really making things better or not? So it's like hypothesis testing, I guess. Every strategy, every initiative that you implement in your organisation is a hypothesis, and it's a hypothesis that will this improve performance or won't it? And your measures are the way to answer that question. Thanks, Marcia, again for sharing that. And it is New Jersey. Thank you. I got it right. Okay, let's move on to the third topic our call today. And this is the simple formula, three-part formula that I learned from performance management expert Gary Kokens to overcome resistance to performance measurement. It's such a cool little formula. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did when I discovered it. This is what Gary Kokens offers in his latest book. And his book is Performance Management, Integrating Strategy Execution, Methodologies, Risk, and Analytics. So that's Performance Management, Integrating Strategy Execution, Methodologies, Risk, and Analytics. And in this book, one of the little chapters talks about this formula for overcoming resistance, and it's the DVF formula. D for, well, I'll tell you what they stand for. D for dissatisfaction, V for vision, and F for first practical steps. And the idea is that D times V times F has to be greater than R, and R is resistance. So it's the combination of dissatisfaction with how things are now, combined with a vision of what better looks like, what the future could look like, combined with the first practical steps to make some progress toward that vision. Those three things in combination you need, and how well you do those has to be greater than the resistance that people are feeling, managers and executives are feeling for performance measurement. So let's spend a bit of time looking at each of the three ingredients in the formula. So D is for dissatisfaction. There is no need to change unless we're not happy with how things are now. And the less happy we are with how things are now, the more impetus we feel to change. That's basically the premise of the dissatisfaction ingredient in the DVF formula. When it comes to performance measurement, the feelings of dissatisfaction for the manager or executive who isn't supporting measurement will not likely come from the fact that there are no measures now, they aren't the right measures, we're not doing measurement well enough. They don't care about any of that stuff. So going to them and trying to increase the dissatisfaction by saying, look, we're not measuring good things, or our measurement system needs investment, or it's taking too long. They don't care about that stuff. They're not valuing measurement. The feelings of dissatisfaction that you need to awaken in these managers and executives has to come from the problems that performance measurement can solve that are problems they care about. And there could be things like constant customer complaints about the same issues over and over again, or the marketing budget constantly running over and spending out of control and really not seeing the benefits, or not sure that there are the benefits from the marketing spend. Or it could be a problem around negative public relations due to safety incidents. It could be that strategy isn't being implemented, or it's not easy for people to communicate and understood. So what are the problems that they're facing that you could reawaken the dissatisfaction? But there have got to be problems, obviously, that performance measurement is going to help. And most problems performance measurement can help in some way. Find out what these problems are for your manager or executive. Understand them and how they've tried to solve them in the past. Bring the truth out in conversations about these problems, solutions in the past that didn't work and why, no real understanding of the true size of the problem or its causes, or what will likely happen, you know, the consequences if the problem is treated in the same way as it's always been treated in the past, or if it's ignored altogether. If you've got any existing data, you could use it to give some objective information about the size of the problem or its possible causes. And that would be absolutely fine, but without sort of putting them up there and saying, hey, look at these performance measures, just have it as a natural part of talking about the problem. The centre of the conversation needs to be the problem, not the measures. And this is not about scaremongering either. It's about bringing out the truth of how it is when we don't measure things that are too complex to manage simply by walking around and seeing. Probably the greatest point about building the dissatisfaction in the DVF formula is tapping into that sense of not being in control, of not really knowing what's going on and not really knowing what to do about it. If that's not intensely dissatisfying to a manager or executive who should be in control, who should know what's going on and what to do about it, then I don't know what is. So work on that idea of how do I awaken this dissatisfaction about performance in my executive or manager who's not really engaging in measurement. Let's go on to the second part. The V in the DVF formula for overcoming resistance is for vision. And for the manager or executive who does not feel compelled to support performance measurement, it's a vision of wonderful things that can be there for them if they do go down the measurement path. What kind of vision do you think would compel them to value performance measurement? We'll play with this a little bit. And again, please feel free to share your ideas about what is a great future state, a wonderful, compelling future state that measurement can create that could really excite or engage managers and executives? How could it make their world better? I'll list a few ideas here, but again, please feel free to pop some of your own ideas into the Q&A box on the webcast page. Firstly, it could be this place where everyone understands the organization's strategy. In other words, when you talk to them, they can put it into their own words. They can list what they do each day to help achieve that strategy. And when you watch them, they're doing it. They're doing those things. It could be that your executive or manager can know within minutes how important projects are tracking, whether those projects are making the difference they should be making, and if anything's amiss, they can correct it before it turns into disaster. That compelling vision could be that they take much less work home with them, and if they do choose to take work home with them, because most people who are ambitious tend to be workaholics, it's the fun, exciting stuff that they're taking home, like brainstorming product ideas for a new market or planning the office golf tournament. It's not the please explain stuff, the auditor's defect reports, etc., that they're taking home with them. Not at all. Another part of that vision could be every day that they come into their office, their assistant, their PA or secretary, has a neat little stack of letters of praise and thanks from customers waiting on their desk, instead of in the past when it used to be stacks of bitter complaints. It could be that the office is filled with energy and laughter and hustling about of happy and industrious people who are really enjoying what they're doing. They're talking about solutions instead of complaining about problems. They're eating cappuccino cream cake to celebrate another target being hit, those sorts of things. So it's painting that picture of a vision that will compel them, a vision that you know measurement is certainly a part of helping. So if you've got some more you want to add to that list, feel free. I'll check in just a second, but I'll keep tracking along. It is important for you to think for yourself about, you know, what is that vision that could make your managers and executives sit up and pay attention to the benefits of measuring performance? How would their typical day or week pan out? You know, if the right things were measured and tracked and the focus and became the focus of their staff's attention, what does that look like? What does that sound like? What does that feel like? Describe the vision as richly as you can, as colourfully as you can, and practice it, because what you're going to do is have little morsels of this vision roll off your tongue and into conversations that you have with these managers and executives, whether it's in meetings or corridors or elevators. Whenever you get the chance to talk about a future state that you know they'll relate to, you want to be ready to do that and do it naturally and engagingly. Now, we'll keep going on to the next step, which is F. It's for first practical steps. And this is the idea of having having those first actions really clear. That's what the F is in the DVF formula, so that you can take away the pain and overwhelm of knowing where to start with performance measurement. You know, people will usually feel quite dissatisfied when they feel dissatisfied about how things are and inspired by a vision, they can often feel quite stuck about what to do about it. So the F part of the formula makes sure that you don't leave people feeling that frustration, that dissonance, that uncomfortable dissonance. It's much easier to work out the first practical steps for performance measurement when you know the process to follow to measure what matters. The measurement process itself has got several specific steps. There's really, I guess if I was summarising them, there'd be five basic steps, and here's what they are. The first step is making strategy measurable, because most strategy isn't written in a way that is measurable. The second step is to design or find and choose meaningful measures of that strategy. The third step is to define the measures, and that's different to designing them or choosing them. Defining the measures is about specifying exactly how you're going to bring them to life. The fourth step is reporting the measures, in other words, presenting them in a way that people can use them. And fifthly, using them, putting the measures into practice through decision-making and performance improvement projects. And incidentally, just because you know the process, that doesn't mean you've necessarily got to start with step one either. For example, if you already have some performance measures but no one's really using them, great opportunity to take a look at how those measures are being presented and reported to people. You know, that could be a first step. Step four is to create a new performance report layout and, you know, make it easier for people to see the value of their existing measures and even see which measures aren't valuable at all. Often that's a really good trigger to get people revved up to find more meaningful measures. So really, you'd start at step four, but then you'd go back to step one. Now, how successfully you do each of these steps is very important, because in reality, you're already doing them, honestly. But if you don't have meaningful measures that drive performance improvement, then you can't be doing one or more of the steps particularly well enough. That's logical, but it's also really evident from what I've seen in organisations over the past 15 years or so. None of these steps are done well. There is no systemic approach to them, and detailed sub-steps, you know, exactly how do you make a strategy measurable, exactly how do you design a meaningful measure, even for something really intangible, those sub-steps aren't clear. And even though you might be applying balanced scorecard or using strategy maps, it's very likely you still have strategies that are too vague to measure meaningfully, and you very likely still have measures that people don't believe in. Or that can't really be feasibly implemented either. You may even have strategies that you currently believe can't be measured, which I don't necessarily agree with. And if you want to challenge me on that, join me next Tuesday with our Measures and More call, expert interview. It's with Doug Hubbard, who in my book is the guru of measurability, who really does believe anything can be measured. Sorry, just taking a sip of my tea there. And really, this is why the performance measure blueprint's been so popular, because it actually fills in those gaps, the detailed sub-steps for doing measurement well. I will give you a little bit more information about the performance measure blueprint soon, but for those of you who may have to leave early, or and I can see that we're already only have 10 minutes left in our call, so I'm pretty sure we're going to go a little bit over. I'll give you the links now so that you can learn a bit more about the performance measure blueprint, and there's two ways that you can actually get access to it. Firstly, we've got our ninth performance measure blueprint workshop coming up on August 19 and 20 in Brisbane. Gorgeous subtropical city, best place in the world to be at that time of year in August. And we've also got the webpage ready now that will tell you all about that event, and it also gives you some information about the blueprint as well. So if you're interested in that workshop, the Performance Measure Blueprint Workshop on August 19 and 20, the website to go to is www.performancemeasureblueprint.com. So that's performancemeasureblueprint.com, and it will tell you all about the workshop. Now, for those of you, Marsha, this might be you. You're in New Jersey thinking, no way am I going to Brisbane. Well, you might. You might like a holiday. But for those of you who can't make it, there's another way that you can learn more about the performance measure blueprint, and that's with the self-paced audio program. And that way you can learn and apply the blueprint in your office or your home, wherever you like to do your learning, and apply it in your own time. And the link for that is stacybarr.com, stacybarr.com/pmbaudio.html. That's pmbaudio.html, PMB as in performance measure blueprint. Okay, so Gary Kokin's DVF formula for overcoming resistance is about increasing dissatisfaction with how performance is now, painting a riveting vision of how great things can be in the future when performance problems can be solved, and also offering those first practical steps for achieving that vision. And like I said before, I didn't tell you this. Gary Kokins is going to be my guest for possibly our August Measures and More Mastermind expert interview. He emailed me this morning to say that he's got a bit of travel going on then, so if we can still keep him for August, that's fine. Otherwise, we'll move him to probably September. But you don't want to miss that. Gary is he's lovely. He's a very cheeky man. I think he's got a great sense of humour and also very knowledgeable and experienced in the performance management space too. You can look out for details about this and how to join as a free Measures and More Silver member. Just look out for that in the next Measure Up e-zine. There'll be instructions in there for how you can do it. That way you can listen in and ask questions as I interview Gary. Okay, now before we get on with our final topic for today, I want to give you a final reminder of how you can ask questions, really, for me to address before we end our call today. Again, it's using the Q&A form on our webcast page. You can start putting your questions in now if you have some. For those of you who have joined by phone, I will open up the lines too later. So if you want to ask your question via telephone, you have a chance to do that. So you might want to get your question ready too. If you are listening via phone and you don't want to speak out loud, you can, and you've got an access to your PC and to the internet, you can pop over to the webcast page and feel free to submit your question that way too. It's stacybarr.com/managingupwebcast.html, managingupwebcast.html. Okay, topic four for today, how you can make the case for performance measurement in your organization instead of waiting for a miracle to occur. Now, before we do get into this fourth topic, I've got a little caveat for you. I am not about to tell you how to write up a business case for implementing performance measurement. If your managers and executives aren't interested enough yet to support measurement, you're wasting your time doing that. you're offering a solution to someone who doesn't think they've got a problem yet. So when I say make the case for performance measurement, I'm talking about everyday things that you can do to help your managers and executives see performance issues differently in how they have in the past. And so that's so that they can see the value that measuring what matters can give in helping them to get more of what they want. So it's really starting in their space. It's not about putting up a performance measurement business case. The first strategy, everyday strategy, that you can use to make the case for performance measurement is to use Socratic questioning to improve the conversations that you have with your managers and executives and to help them surface their assumptions about performance and challenge those assumptions so they might come to a more helpful view of how measurement can serve them. So that's Socratic questioning. And it's not about criticism or complaining or being a smarty pants. Socratic questioning is about asking honest and direct and no beating around the bush questions, really to get to the heart of performance issues. In particular, they are the kinds of questions that cause people to reflect, to go inwards, to think on things in ways different to how they've thought them before. And the bottom line is that it helps them reach insights that they otherwise might not have had. So Socrates was a classical Greek philosopher, and he was credited as one of the founders of Western philosophy. Now, to give you some context, I'll read an excerpt from Wikipedia about the Socratic method, because I think it explains it quite well, and then we'll go into some examples of how you can use Socratic questioning. Okay, so this is from Wikipedia. Perhaps his most important contribution to Western thought is his dialectic method of inquiry, known as the Socratic method or method of elenchus, which he largely applied to the examination of key moral concepts such as the good and justice. It was described first by Plato in the Socratic Dialogues. To solve a problem, it would be broken down into a series of questions, the answers to which gradually distill the answer you seek. The influence of this approach is most strongly felt today in the use of the scientific method, in which hypothesis is the first stage. The development and practice of this method is one of Socrates' most enduring contributions and is a key factor in earning his mantle as the father of political philosophy, ethics, or moral philosophy, and as a figurehead of all the central themes in Western philosophy. To illustrate the use of the Socratic method, a series of questions are posed to help a person or group to determine their underlying beliefs and the extent of their knowledge. The Socratic method is a negative method of hypothesis elimination, in that better hypotheses are found by steadily identifying and eliminating those which lead to contradictions. It was designed to force one to examine one's own beliefs and the validity of such beliefs. In fact, Socrates once said, "I know you won't believe me, but the highest form of human excellence is to question oneself and others." I love that last bit of the quote there. "I know you won't believe me, but the highest form of human excellence is to question oneself and others." And really, the best way to give you an understanding of Socratic questions in relation to performance measurement issues is just really to give you a sample. And you can use these, experiment with them, or create your own versions of them. I'm going to phrase all of these questions in relation to a particular performance goal to do with effectiveness of IT solutions, just so that you've got a bit of a handle to understanding it. Okay, how many have I got? 12 questions. Don't try to jot all these down. I think it'll drive you crazy. So just remember to come back and download. Well, we'll remind you to come back and download the recording and you can get them. Okay, number one. What exactly does effective mean for an IT solution? So that's the first example of a Socratic question. Number two, how does this relate to other aspects of IT performance? Number three, what do we already know about performance of our IT solutions? Number four, can you give me an example of an effective IT solution? Number five, are you saying effective means that we meet customers' expectations or that we meet what we negotiated with the customer? Number six, how do you know that IT solution effectiveness is a problem worth fixing? Number seven, what evidence is there to support that an investment in educating our customers about IT issues will be worth it? Number eight, another way of looking at this is that we just have too much waste in our IT development processes. Does this seem reasonable? Number nine, what alternative ways of looking at IT solutions effectiveness are there? Number 10, why is educating our customers about IT issues necessary? Number 11, who benefits from educating our customers about IT issues? 12, what are the consequences of keeping this IT effectiveness goal so broad, the consequences of not defining effectiveness more specifically? Well, I hope that gives you the idea. I mean, these are for sure not an exhaustive list of Socratic questions either, but the point is that the quality of your questions can have a profound impact on the quality of conversations you have with your managers and executives. But remember, you want to ask the kinds of questions that cause those managers and executives to reflect, to think on things in ways different to how they normally do, and that help them reach insights they otherwise might not have had. It's not about being a smarty pants and proving people wrong or asking questions to poke a reaction out of them. It's about opening up a rich and enlightening dialogue to uncover what really does matter and to help people see and smash their assumptions about performance measurement and its value. Okay, so the second strategy then to make the case for performance measurement is to show your managers and executives real life examples of what their peers are doing and what those who they're looking up to are doing in relation to measuring and managing organizational performance. To find out which organizations or CEOs or thought leaders they follow or that they resonate with. What books do they read? Whose books do they read? Which organizations or companies have they visited with in the past or are hoping to visit in the future? Which networks are they a part of? Who do they quote? What stories do they tell? From these people or organizations or companies that they respect or admire, are any of those measuring performance well and getting great results? Are they role models for good performance measurement? You know, like Dell Computers have a great cash-to-cash cycle performance. FedEx are obviously great with on-time delivery. Qantas, well, used to be, had a flawless safety record. And Google, well, they're pretty much great at everything they do. You know, find case studies and stories or anecdotes of real-life results from successful performance measurement in the companies and organizations that your managers or executives respect or admire. And then you will be equipped with great stories to share when the topic of conversation turns to performance-related issues. Stories sell so much better than facts and figures, and especially stories that are about organizations or companies or people that your managers and executives will prick their ears up to and listen to because they value. The third strategy that I'm going to suggest for you is to use pilot tests, really small runs on the board, and it's about demonstrating how performance measurement can solve problems quickly, easily and convincingly and cheaply within your own company or organization. Performance measurement pilot tests are not dashboard implementations that are huge and costly, and they are certainly not complete implementations of performance measures for every dimension or every perspective or every cascaded level of your organization's strategy. What they are small, quick, and contained projects where what you do is apply performance measurement to solve a problem or achieve a goal, essentially to get a good run on the board that can prove to your manager executive the power of measuring in a meaningful way. And that's really why they're a great first practical step in Gary Kokin's DVF formula, to make it easier to get started once you've gotten your manager or executive to feel dissatisfied. In other words, they've become very aware of a problem that needs solving, but can also see that compelling vision of how things could be if the problem was solved. Your first practical step is to offer a test, a quick and easy and cheap way of measuring the problem area, diagnosing its causes, and finding the strategies that can be proven to improve performance. One of my clients did this a few years ago, in fact, in a railway workshop. Imagine a huge shed the size of a suburban block filled with locomotives and wagons in varying forms of assemblage, cranes, lathes, painting bays, metal absolutely everywhere. the guys that work in that railway workshop were involved in small performance improvement projects where they were really just taking a few weeks to solve all kinds of performance problems, like the cycle time of painting wagons, the cost of repairing traction motors, shop floor accidents, reducing them, taking rework out of the electrical components process. So measures played a vital, pivotal role in helping the teams find the fixes that worked, but also in demonstrating the business impact of their projects. But what you want to do is make sure that you do the measurement part well, that you weave the steps of choosing meaningful measures and reporting and using them into your improvement project before you start. So the project really ought to be about solving the problem. That's the focus. But you want to make sure you do the measurement thing really well because you want to demonstrate the power that it has. You're never going to convince your managers or executives of the value of adopting performance measurement, organisation or company-wide, unless you do a good job with it in your pilot. Don't repeat the problems that they've seen in the past, you know, like measuring irrelevant things, measuring too much, making data collection go crazy, producing a plethora of reports that don't make any sense. And having absolutely no evidence that measures really did drive the outcomes of the project. You have to demonstrate how measuring what matters can be easy, elegant, and absolutely pivotal to the success of any performance improvement initiative that you take. These are the steps that we teach in the performance measure blueprint. It's called a blueprint for a good reason, and that's because it's not just a wadge of theory that we try and stuff into your brains. It's a step-by-step process. Each step, we give you the nitty-gritty technique to follow. We show you how it looks when it's done well. We demonstrate how to do it, and we give you templates to make it faster and easier. The kinds of techniques that you want to be very good at in measurement is really, well, it's the techniques we teach, so I'll give you a sample of them. How to make fluffy, vague motherhood goals like enhance effectiveness and efficiency of all business processes, how to make those actually measurable, how to design measures, even for very intangible goals like customer value or innovative culture, how to prevent new measures from resulting in either of the two extremes of data collection mayhem on one extreme or getting stuck in the too hard basket at the other extreme where nothing ever happens to the measure, it never comes to life. How to write a performance report that snaps people to performance-improving attention instead of seducing them into boredom-induced slumber or a data-overwhelmed stupor. How to get people talking about performance in a way that excites them to improve performance rather than sweeping it under the rug or making excuses about having real work to do. Performance improvement's real work. I don't know why people don't understand that. Like I mentioned earlier, there are two ways that you can get the performance measure blueprint at the moment. So I'll give you the links again and leave it up to you to choose which way sounds right for you. So our ninth performance measure blueprint workshop on August 19 and 20 in Brisbane, which is actually already 25% sold out, which is cool. We only launched it last week. The webpage where you can get lots more information about it and more information about the blueprint itself is performancemeasureblueprint.com. So it's performancemeasureblueprint.com. And for those of you who can't make it to Brisbane in August, we've got the freshly re-released, rebranded version of the Performance Measure Blueprint self-paced audio program. So you can learn the blueprint in your own office, in your own time, and apply it at your own pace. And that's at stacybarr.com/pmbaudio.html. So stacybarr.com/pmbaudio.html. All right, we are at the stage where we'll start looking at questions. So if you haven't submitted a question yet and you'd like to, now is your chance to do that. I can see, Michael, you've sent another comment through. That's cool. I'll start with you. Hi, Stacey. Many staff who have been long-term seem to go through ups and downs. Obviously, we're all human, so we must accept people have swings. Sometimes these are personal, other times they are economic, and they can be just tired. So to ensure performance can be objective, we must measure over time and understand how do we ensure the organisation does not make hasty decisions when business is under financial stress. Good performers do have high and lows. What's the way of addressing this? So I guess, Michael, what you're wanting to avoid is where maybe an organisation's feeling the financial stress and has decided to lay off people, so it's doing a quick and dirty look at who are the low performers and getting rid of them. And unfortunately, the people that they're getting rid of just happen to be on one of those downward swings, and otherwise they're generally really good. I think that's the case a lot. It's actually happened to a friend of mine recently, fantastic guy doing wonderful things for his organisation, and he was a culprit of exactly that thing happening, the organisation making a hasty decision to cull people out of the organisation and letting go of some really fantastic people that were going to be great for their future. This is a hard thing to overcome. It's not something that is going to be dealt with a quick fix. It's more, I think, a matter of, a matter of transitioning over time from that tendency to want to make fast, hasty decisions to really thinking a lot more systemically and more long term. That does take a while to make that shift. Probably the most practical thing you can do in the short term is where you see the risk of these sorts of decisions being made is to use Socratic questioning. So ask questions that challenge the assumptions people are making in those hasty decisions. So if they're just about ready to get rid of a whole lot of so-called low performers, then ask questions. You know, what are the consequences of letting these people go? What are the assumptions that we're making in letting these people go? And even have a few examples. Is one of the assumptions that we're making here that the people who are performing on the low end of the scale now always perform on the low end of the scale? Are these people that we're thinking of letting go, are these people that have really critical organisational knowledge that we'll never be able to get back again? Or are they people who we really need to make sure that we can come back strong in the medium to long term? Another assumption is getting rid of people the best way to handle our financial pinch? What are some of the other things that we could do to manage this financial turbulence? What other ideas can we have to find ways to save money I'm just thinking back to my friend who was in this situation. One of his suggestions when he told me the story, he said there were so many people who were told they were being laid off that said, look, let me work for nothing for a few weeks. Let me work on half pay. I just want to stay. I believe in this organization and I want to, I appreciate things are tough. I'm happy to take a cut, but don't get rid of me entirely. So there's, ask people for solutions. Have a half day open space workshop where people come in and share ideas and see what can come out of that creative space. Michael, I hope those tips are okay for you. Your question is a really important one and one that deserves a lot more time to really get into, but I hope that those couple of tips can help you. I think the Socratic questioning is very important because it's something you can do quickly and easily and something that you can help other people do too. When they hear you asking those questions, they'll go, wow, they're good questions, and it will prompt them to ask those questions. And you can start that ripple effect of Socratic questioning. Okay, I'll see if there's another question that we might be able to take. Francois, you have got a suggestion here. The red bead experiment by Edwards Deming is such a good demonstration of how confusing variation can be in human performance. So Francois is suggesting something for you, I think, there, Michael, a practical experiment that shows how random variability is natural and normal. And sometimes we mistake it for a signal and think we've got to do something about this, but we don't always have to. Michael, if you want to learn more about that, I know Francois, so I can put you in touch with him. Just, Michael, send me an email, info@stacybarr.com, and ask for an introduction to Francois, and I'll put you in touch. I'm sure he'd be more than happy to tell you about the red bead experiment. That was a quick one. We'll see. Are there any more questions? I can't see any on the coming through on the phone, so that's okay too. Alrighty. Well, we might start wrapping up then. We have gone over time, and I apologise for that, but I hope it was worth it. Feel free to send me a little message and tell me what you thought of today's webcast. You can do that in the Q&A box, or you can email me at info@stacybarr.com. I want to say a really big thanks to you all for joining today. The audio recording is going to be available within the next 24 hours on the webcast page. I am going to email you a link when the recording's ready, so you can easily pop back and either listen online or download it. Now, remember the two links that you want to go to if you think you're ready for the ease and convenience of the Performance Measure Blueprint. Our live workshop in August, if you're keen to come along to that, the website is performancemeasureblueprint.com. Or if you're interested in the self-paced audio program version of it, if you can't travel to Brisbane in August, where basically it's the same content, but it's on CD, so you can get to listen to it over and again, and I'm talking you through it. There's a lot of advantages of the self-paced audio program, actually, if you're not all that into live learning. The link for the self-paced audio program is stacybarr.com/pmbaudio.html, but I'm sure I'll put the links on the webcast page, so it'll be there for you when I post the recording. If you have any questions at all, always feel welcomed to email me at info@stacybarr.com. You will come through to my assistant, Claire, but that's just my way. Claire's my way of collating related emails together so I can respond to them efficiently. So, always feel welcome to email info@stacybarr.com. And this is where we will leave you. Thank you, everyone, for joining the call today. And this is Stacy Barr, Performance Measure Specialist, signing off.